This is WABF. It's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Kempo-Minosi of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by an anonymous sponsor and Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, hello to you, Laurie. It is a good morning. We've had some rain in the area, and it's a little overcast, so we're maybe the grass will stay green. We'll see what happens. But the grass is not too green in international affairs, which is what we want to talk about today. So I've got Commander D. Cox here, our resident SEAL expert, intel guy.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Good. And then, of course, I am shamelessly bringing back my sponsor for more interpretations of things. Kevin Spriggs is here.
Welcome,
and then, of
Kevin
course,
and Deke.
Thank you.
Judd is here filming, and I'm going to have to bring Judd in. So we've got a balanced view of things, right? Okay.
Yes,
a real balanced view. Okay. So we want to talk about, obviously, what's going on with the latest flare-up in the Middle East. I want to start with a little discussion of the roots of all of this. And then I wanted to transition into the present situation, what's going on with it, and try to identify, what happened with the intelligence failure, where we think, Israel is going to go next, the degree to which, Hezbollah and the Iranian Quds force in Syria, could very well create a three-front war for Israel, and what happens if that happens, okay? Then, of course, we've got to talk about good old Uncle Joe Biden telling everybody, we've got your back. Really? Now, Lori's not here, so I could actually say something really bad, which I'm tempted to, but no. All right, so I won't say the word that I want, but at any rate, so there's Biden telling, Netanyahu, yeah, we've got your back. Well, we'll see how far that goes, okay? I can't believe it. At any rate, after we talk about that, I do want to try to see where things go from a geostrategic, evaluation of what happens if the Ruskies decide that they're going to give a security guarantee to the Iranians. Because let's face it, if there's a three-pronged war, three-front war, and Israel starts to go down the tube for any number of reasons, do you think for a second the U.S. is going to bail them out? I have real questions about that, although we should. That's another issue. But if the Israelis are going to stick to never again, my feeling is that they will use whatever they have to do, and they'll start with Iran. And if that happens, then we've got the security guarantee out there with the Ruskies. So what happens next? Now, Putin's talked about using nukes in Ukraine. He hasn't been talking too much about it lately, but nevertheless, it's on the table. So if he gives the security guarantee to Iran, what then happens if everything really goes down the tube and suddenly the Israelis are actually going to take out the Iranians one way or another? I mean, my own feeling here at this point is that the Iranians need to have their oil wells and all of the whole oil industry infrastructure destroyed tomorrow. That's what I would do to begin with. And then we'll worry about the nuclear facilities later. But at any rate, that takes me a little bit off of where I wanted to go with this. And, of course, we'll wrap up with a discussion about the GOP's problem in the House. I mean, and that does have an impact on what's going on here. Now, it just had a flash in my eye. Laurie's taking a picture of the three of us up here. Okay, Laurie, good. Thank you. Well, that's good publicity.
Sorry about that.
We need it. All right, so Once we get through with the GOP business, we are sure to be out of time, but I know that Lori and her good-heartedness will give us a few extra minutes to wrap things up, okay? So let's get started with questions about the roots of all this, okay? And again, there's always going to be two sides of all this. Let me just get through this fairly quickly. And then if any of you all have comments, concerns that I've misinterpreted things, just jump in there. But at this point, this question about the roots, I mean, you keep hearing about, you know, Hamas is just the resistance movement, okay? Well, I don't think they're the resistance movement, okay? And to be honest with you, resistance implies different things to different people, all right? But when you look at the roots of all this and how this goes back, it seems quite clear that when the Jews started to move back into the Holy Land under the impetus of a Zionist movement which says, let's go back to the Holy Land. And they started buying land there. They started moving back in the late 19th century. Understand, too, that there were pockets of Jews who had never left the Holy Land, okay? Not a whole lot, but there still were Jews living where they had lived for thousands of years. So when all of this starts moving in the direction of more Jews coming into the Holy Land, what ends up happening is there's a conflict in terms of the Arabs who were there. Some of them were dispossessed when the Jews were able to purchase lands. So you start seeing issues by the turn of the century. By the early 20th century, there was an increasing number of, you know, Jewish settlements that started to develop their own, let's say, they started to look like a state, okay? They provided their own health care. They provided education. They would, you know, select people to be part of committees to rule things, all right? So you had this development going on that essentially started to lay the groundwork for what the Zionists wanted, which was an independent Jewish state, okay? At the same time, the Arabs who were living there became concerned with all this Jewish immigration because they quite rightly saw that the more Jews that were coming in were going to be, you know, a problem for them in terms of who was going to control this area. Now, keep in mind, before World War I, this area was controlled by the Ottoman Turks. And what they didn't care too much about what was going on. Many of the lands that were sold were to absentee landlords. So the concern for what's going on with the Arabs in this area was little to none, okay? But World War I comes along. Next thing you know, you've got a major issue in terms of making sure that the Ottoman areas are not going to be, you know, allowed to just hurt the British. Now, we all know that Churchill tried to do the major landing and it all fell apart and blah, blah, blah. So there was always this interest about what's going on with the Turks. But at the same time, there were Jewish individuals who went to London and started to press for a homeland for the Jews. So by 1917, you get this Balfour Declaration, which guarantees a Jewish homeland. Well, I mean, that kind of sets the Arab people there who had concerns and who had interests, two major families that were there competing for, you know, power, along with other interests that were in the area too. So you have this situation suddenly developing where, again, we get back to the roots question. Is this going to be a question about who owns the territory, who controls the territory? I mean, that's kind of a traditional, you know, we want the land, you're not going to take it from us, that sort of thing. But inside that normal dynamic, there is an anti-Jewish portion of what's going on with the Mufti of Jerusalem. And by 1920, after the war, when things sort of settled out, what you saw developing was more Jewish immigration and the Mufti of Jerusalem really pushing for riots and killing of Jews. So by between 1920 and 1925, you had this civil war, but you had this kind of rejection of the Jews, not because of just territorial issues, but for religious reasons. And I think that that's an aspect of this where when you look at it today, run the reel forward on this, what you're going to see is clearly, you know, whether it's you look at Hamas or any of the rest of them, we're back to What happened after 9/11? Suddenly, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood and other extremist groups, Al-Qaeda, you know, ISIS later on, look at who they are in terms of their belief system. And the argument that I would make at this juncture is that to a certain degree, by the 80s, there began this movement towards land for peace, okay? And this is after 20 years of war from 56, 67, 72, three major wars that the Israelis were able to defeat the Arab states with, okay? And in the course of that time, they occupied various Arab lands, okay? The Golan Heights, Sinai, the Gaza Strip, and parts of the West Bank of Jordan. Okay, so you have this situation where, you know, territory then became an issue. Now, it's interesting, and don't forget this, the Israelis left Sinai. The Israelis gave up the Gaza Strip. They did not get rid of the Golan Heights, and thank God they didn't. It's strategically important to hold on to that. They also kept parts of the West Bank, which were, you know, again, a major issue today in terms of what is Netanyahu doing about West Bank penetration, more settlements, Jewish settlements, things like that. So this has not gone away. But land for peace became the hallmark of international diplomacy. And finally, the PLO under Arafat and Begin, who led the Likud government in Israel, essentially said, we're willing to come to grips with it. Arafat, led a secular organization, the PLO. Well, at the same time all of that is developing, all this, you know, feel me, touch me, good stuff happening on the land issue, what's going on inside the more hardcore, you know, conservatives, if you want to look at it that way, Hamas, they were totally opposed to what is happening. They're hardcore. They want to kill the Jews. There's no land for peace business here. And so by the time Bush and Rice are there, the war on terror is going on, land for peace is still the hallmark thought. And so Bush and Rice push, along with a couple of other states, international states, push for the Israelis to withdraw from Gaza. Now, you may not remember this, but at the time, even though Hamas was not in power, people assumed that if they win an election, then what happens? And the liberal establishment, mirror imaging, which is the worst form of things, they look there and say, well, once Hamas has to govern, then everything will work itself out. Because that's how we do it. Westerners, hey, you got to take care of your people. You want to win their vote, you got to make sure the roads are good, blah, blah, blah. That was all BS. And that's the same problem you have today. This BS factor that somehow these people can be worked with, okay? So at this juncture then, what you see playing itself out is this whole question about what are the roots? Can we ever solve this? And at this particular point, I would say, as far as Netanyahu and the Israelis are concerned, Hamas is dead. There is no going back to, you know, well, let's negotiate. Let's do this. Let's do that. They've been doing that. And it goes nowhere. And it goes nowhere because it can't go anywhere because Hamas, Hezbollah, the Iranians, even though they may be, you know, Shia and Sunni, they've come together on this issue about this is the little Satan, we're going to destroy it. The next one that they want is the great Satan, which is us. But that's a separate story. So here we are at this particular point where you've got, you know, a situation which I think is extremely dangerous, much more so than even the whole business with the Ukrainians. And even though Putin has talked about this issue about, I'm going to use a tactical nuclear weapon. Okay, that's certainly not good to hear. But this issue, in my view, and it takes us right to the heart of what's going on. The Iranians are the head of the snake. Are they going to be willing to allow the Israelis to take take out Hamas, and more than likely, if I'm the Israelis, and I've said this for a long time talking about this, there's no reason to stop with Hamas. They've got to eliminate Hezbollah too, and then what happens in Syria is another issue. But that issue is you've got Iranian Quds Force people in Syria. They helped, you know, Assad win in there. And so you have this situation where, is this thing ever going to be resolved through, quote, negotiations? Doubtful at best. So if the Israelis take out Hamas and take out Hezbollah, what are the Iranians going to do? And I would argue at this point that, you know, if the Iranians decide that they are actually going to finally take on the Israelis, then it's just going to open up a can of worms internationally to a point. And I say to a point because Israel has always had to deal with the international community, you know, trying to contain them from doing what's necessary for them to survive. So, with my lead in, let's now talk a little bit about, and look, again, I recognize this is a Dr. Lunatic, I get it, all right. But nevertheless, let's shift now to the intelligence failure. That seems to be the thing. And we have Mr. Intelligence here. So what is your take on the intelligence failure, and what about the American part of the intelligence failure?
Yeah, so before we get started right on that, the one thing I wanted to point out is that the Ottoman Empire, you know, started in 1299, and they ruled for, you know, just over six centuries there. And, you know, I served in that part of the world, in Europe, in the Levant, through all of the 1980s, 1990s, right, up into the mm-hmm. early 2000s. And the thing that is just very clear, you know, from my experience there, is that the Ottomans, you know, in their current embodiment of, you know, Erdogan, you know, who is, you know, not secular, you know, Islam, you know, very, very hardcore, you know, they have made a history out of eradicating all religions, including mm-hmm. Christianity, from not just present day Turkey, but under the Ottomans, they did everything that they could to expel, you know, the Israelites, right, and the Jews. And so it you know, and it's very important because, you know, you can look at the most recent history, you know, of Zionism and the movement, but, you know, look at, when you really look back at the true roots of this, you know, it was a very focused effort under the caliphate of the Ottomans, you know, to expunge, completely eradicate. You want to talk about ethnic cleansing, the original ethnic cleansing, right. And the Turks, you know, have a brutal history of this as well, right? At the end of World War I, you know, and the slaughter that they caused, you know, but they were the first ones that actually, you know, tried to eradicate the Jews from the Levant, right? And so it's important that we note that. And so it wasn't that the Jews just came out of nowhere or were, you know, put back into the Levant, you know, by the British, you know. No, they were trying to reclaim their original ancestral homeland. Right. And so, you know, there are some people, you know, certainly in the religious right here in America, in the West, who want to try and make a, you know, want to add a religious overtone to that. But just as a people, you know, we have to acknowledge that the Jews have every right to be there. You know, they have every right to be there. And so, you know, to fast forward now to, you know, to current time, you know, it's interesting, you know, that Hamas, and this is not well known or widely discussed, but Hamas was actually a creation of the Israeli intelligence services. The Mossad actually, you know, made a decision, you know, and you know, let's go back to Yasser Arafat mm-hmm. and the PLO. The, you know, Hamas was created, you know, in the 80s and 90s as a divide and conquer strategy, right. You know, by the Mossad. And so,
well, I didn't know that.
But yeah. Oh, yeah. And so it's been acknowledged publicly by multiple Israeli leaders, you know, and former intelligence officials that you know, Hamas was a monster of their own creation, because they were trying to divide and conquer the Palestinians, and they viewed Hamas as an effective tool to do that.
Right.
What they did not anticipate was the, you know, the role of the Iranians, and also that the PLO under Yasser Arafat would not you know, didn't have legs. You know, they wouldn't last, that they were so corrupt that, right. that even the Palestinians got sick of them and then opened the door to Hamas and its more radical right. form of governance, right? And so, you know, that's to bring us current, okay? But, you know, one of the key, most seminal events when we talk about how did this happen, okay? I was there during the second Intifada, you know, mm-hmm. in late 2001 into 2002, which at that point it had been cooking for a couple of years, you know, right. Suicide bombers detonating almost daily, sometimes multiple times daily in Tel Aviv or, mm-hmm. You know, Haifa or, you know, any of Ashkelon, any of the other major cities there. And, you know, when I was there, I literally was there December of 2001, and we had, a suicide bomber, you know, detonate a block away from us. You know, I mean, it's real, you know. Right. And so when you look at what actually was going on during that time, and it's not well understood, but, you know, just that next month, you know, the Israeli forces took down the merchant vessel Karine A. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a large, you know, a medium-sized merchant, you know, down in the Red Sea, and it was attempting to infiltrate Gaza and break the blockade, the Israeli blockade of Gaza, to drop off a massive payload of arms and weapons, you know, mostly of Chinese manufacture and origin,
right.
but bought by Iranian money, you know. And so, you know, it's very interesting if you, you know, just look it up, you know, Google, you know, Karine A, you know, but, you know, they've had nonstop efforts to infiltrate Gaza. And they do it by submarines on top of a well-established ancient smuggling network, mm-hmm. okay, that's run by the Jawar family out of Tartus, Syria, okay? But the thing is that they've done it by surface craft, you know, like this medium-sized freighter. They've mm-hmm. done it by submarines, and they'll drop packages, you know, at designated drop points off the coast of Gaza, and then the Gazans will come out, the smugglers in their smaller right. boats, and they'll transship. I mean, it's not well-reported or well-understood, but when you look at the sheer volume of military hardware, and especially the make and model of some of this stuff, mm-hmm. you know, it was mostly, much of it anyway, of Chinese manufacture. You know, it's not also not talked about. You know, you won't hear the mainstream media talk about this, but, you know, Iran has been the number one export client for Chinese arms over the last several yeah. decades. And, you know, we have found, you know, everything from, you know, guns, you know, AK-47s to, you know, to ammunition, to landmines, you know, including, you know, just pipe. You know, they wonder where in the world, how in the world do, you know, does Hamas, you know, get the ability to, you know, manufacture, you know, domestically in Gaza, of all places, you know, 5,000 rockets. Well, they did it, you know, in part anyway, by, you know, importation of Chinese piping, gas piping that mm-hmm. was imported under, you know, oh, we're replacing right. our gas pipelines in Gaza, right? Right. No, we've done the reverse engineering on some of those recovered rockets, and you know, it's got, you know, Chinese, you know, script on it, you know, produced at the Haiyang factory, you know, in right. China, right? I mean, it's just no question, you know, in all of your opening dialogue there, no mention of China. You know, we must talk about China in the context of current events, you know, that Iran is a proxy of China, you know, which is, again, is not well understood, but people need to understand that just in the last two and a half years since, you know, the Biden regime, the corrupt Biden regime, has taken office, that they totally immediately turned their back to smuggling. I mean, it started before, you know, he was even sworn in.
Yeah.
Okay, they turned their back to Iran busting on sanctions, you know, to ship massive quantities of oil to the, you know, the CCP, you know, China, and now that's gotten to the tune of Iran profiting somewhere in the neighborhood of $25 to $30 billion a year just in their oil exports to one country, China.
Exactly.
And so when you look at the state sponsors of terrorism, okay, yeah, you know, and you're talking about cutting off the snake, the head of the snake, you know, absolutely. They, you know, the first problem that the Israelis have to do is they have to cut off the head of Hamas. They have to eradicate them. They are a absolute cancer. You know, it's a monster of their own creation. And, You know, the difficulty is that, and you know, they asked me the same questions 20 years ago, right, when I was there, which is they're feeling you out to find out if you are, you know, what your reaction would be if they had to go in full force in Gaza and actually start, you know, pushing the Gazans into Egypt, right? And you know, and let's call that what it is, you know, which is ethnic cleansing. You know, it's interesting that, you know,
but the Egyptians owned Gaza before, well, right after 1948, they occupied it. So this whole idea that Palestinians have some sort of an identity with there is all BS.
It is BS. And so they're a minority, right, among the Arabs. Right. And so it's a problem. And, you know, and again, I don't want to dominate the conversation here, the dialogue, but it's interesting.
That's okay. You're doing good.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, but here's the other part. Right. So Israel has a couple of problems, right? And you know, besides the fact that they've got this absolute malignant cancer festering and growing, you know, in Gaza and also in the West Bank, you know, one of the other problems that they have, and you know, it goes back to your opening dialogue, Lou, which is that, you know, they've got a problem with numbers, with demographics, right? And so the problem that the Knesset and, you know, the government of, and it's every Israeli government, that they have to balance is they have to balance the number of Jews, you know, mm-hmm. in the Jewish state, okay, right. in the nation of Israel, with the number of Arabs, you know, within their borders. Because if they let that get out of balance or out of whack, right. then it completely changes the whole politic, you know, the whole body politic of Israel
Jewish
changes.
Jewish state ends.
Right, the Jewish state does end. And here's the thing, the Islamists know this, right? And that's, you know, so the eradication part is, you know, you'll hear that often among, you know, the radical Islam, you know, and most of the Arab nations have said that at one point or the other, right? But it's not just about, you know, the way that they've treated the Jews historically and the fact that they've said so, you know, and continue to say so daily now, you know, that they desire the end of the Jewish state, right? They view them as illegitimate, and you know, and they would only have you go back to, you know, to the Balfour Declaration and since, you know, as a miscarriage of justice by the British, without acknowledging their own ethnic cleansing that went on for centuries, right?
Yeah.
So that's the first part.